that we would get this much mileage out of a simple hot dog eating contest. This is how hungry people are for sports. We're actually going to qualify this as a sport. And, you know how many people watched our NBA 2K and our MLB The Show games? I mean, the numbers.
A lot.
A lot watched. And I would imagine that a ton of people are going to be watching on social media last night. We will put on a good, at least I will put on a good show. We'll see about Sliwa. We'll see if he brings his A game. Joining us right now is ESPN MLB beat reporter Jesse Rogers. Jesse, thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon. So now today was the first day that players are expected to show up at their home stadiums. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, guys have been coming in the last few days, to be honest. But like for the Chicago Cubs, the team I cover a lot, they had the bulk of their players come in today and get tested. A couple White Sox players were in a couple days ago. So basically, since Monday, they've been trickling in. The bulk of the testing, though, today, I think they'll be completed today because they need about 24, 48 hours to clear them. And then, of course, practice will start on Friday. So I think by the end of the day today, teams across the country will have tested all their players, coaches, and strength people and all that stuff.
So what test are they using? Is there an instant test, a 15-minute test, a 12-hour test? How's that work?
No, it's basically 24 to 48, from what I understand. I talked to a pitcher today that was tested 2 days ago, and he's still waiting for the results. So let's say it's 48 hours. It's a saliva test to see if they're positive right now, and then a blood test, a prick on the finger, to see if they have the antibodies, to see if obviously they had it previously. So it's both tests at the same time, and everyone's going through it right now as we speak.
So what is the kind of the baseline that baseball is looking at in terms of positive tests or things like that? Is there a number that becomes concerning or that's problematic? Is it just to get everybody in a place where you know what their status is before things get going in full?
Yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question. I mean, the expectation is dozens of players testing positive. Doesn't mean they'll be symptomatic. Today, the Cubs pitching coach, you should, Google my story. It was pretty heart-wrenching listening to him describe his bout with COVID-19. He was really sick. He had tears in his eyes today in a Zoom call with reporters. So, I mean, it can be serious for some people, obviously not so serious for others, but the expectation is dozens of players will test positive. I mean, I have a couple colleagues that think it could be over 100 players. I mean, nobody exactly knows, and 100 players, coaches, we include the entirety of an organization that's getting tested. Maybe it will be in the hundreds. Obviously, if we're talking 400 or 500 people, that would stop the restart, right?
I think
they can deal with dozens or maybe 100, but if the numbers get way out of hand, and nobody knows what that number would be, but this is why there's 30-man squads and then 30-man taxi squads, right? That's a large number to have on your taxi squad, up to 30 people, to replace your regular roster. And so they're trying to do everything they can to insulate themselves so they don't have to stop. We don't know. I mean, I think the answer to the question is what would it take to stop all this is we'll know it when we see it, right?
Right, right.
Communities, hospital gets overrun, a city just can't handle itself, and baseball seems trivial, or obviously a lot of things go wrong within baseball. So it's dual things there, baseball and then obviously the cities that they're located in.
All right, ESPN baseball writer Jesse Rogers is with us, Mason in Ireland, Brian Kamenetsky in for John today. So let's say somebody tests positive today, whether it's that one of a few dozen or one of 100 or whatever that number happens to be. What's the next step for that person?
All right, so they will be immediately sent home. I mean, obviously they won't know if they're positive, but no one's going in the building without a mask. If they get tested in the building, okay, they get tested with a mask on, and then they go home immediately until they get the results. The Cubs, for example, are pulling into their parking lots and getting tested and being sent home. Now, if they're test positive in a couple days, they obviously will be taken out of the mix for practice, and they have to test negative twice within a 24 to 48-hour period. So you get one negative test, and then a day later you get a second negative test. And at that point, you're pretty much cleared to return. But There, no one will return within 2 or 3 days at the minimum. It's going to be at least that long because you have to wait and take that second test. And then a doctor has to still look at you and make sure you're not infectious toward, you know, to other people as well. So there's a couple layers to it. The minimum would be 3 to 5 days, you're out. The maximum, obviously, a lot longer than that. But you're not quarantined for 14 days. You just have to test negative twice within a 24 to 48-hour period, and then you can start the process of getting back in the mix.
Jesse, are there any guidelines or restrictions on families for players throughout the season, or is everybody just expected to kind of use their best judgment?
Yeah, it's use your best judgment, and that is scaring a lot of people within the game. A lot of the agents are warning their younger clients. A lot of the veterans are talking to the younger players as well. These are going to be long conversations within locker rooms, and the teams that have a lot of, you know, that are tight-knit and that can speak truth to each other are going to be better off, because the goal here, the perfect scenario for a team is ballpark, home, ballpark, hotel, ballpark, home, and that is it for 2 months. And that is not easy. And it's not going to be easy for the taxi squads who don't have any games to play and have less structure. So it's really not going to be an easy thing to pull off, but you know, I think the veterans are telling the young guys it's 70, 80 days. Just go to the ballpark and go home. And hopefully the buses are sanitized and all that stuff in between. But you're just asking for trouble if you try to do a lot of other things like go to clubs and all that stuff.
Jesse, we were just talking about Vegas released the over-under or the win totals for Major League Baseball this year. And they've got the Dodgers as the favorite at 38 wins. Does that seem about right to you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I was thinking if anybody gets to 40, that'd be quite an accomplishment. I think there'll be a lot of parity early on, feeling each other out, pitchers only going 3 or 4 innings at most, sloppy play potentially, the extra inning rule is new, the 3-batter minimum new. So when you inject all this uncertainty, it levels the playing field a little bit. So I'd be surprised if some team got out to a 10-0 start or 12-2. I really would. I think there'll be a lot of parity early on, and then, you know, 60 games gives you a little bit of time for the cream to rise to the top. There'll be a couple surprises both ways, I'm sure, maybe more than a couple. You know, a couple teams you don't expect doing well and vice versa. But a team like the Dodgers, I mean, the natural thinking is deeper teams will do best, because I do think injuries besides COVID-19 will be a storyline. Hamstrings, obliques, all that stuff. Guys that might shut it down for the season if they feel bad or feel something tight, because they don't want to risk their future. Mm-hmm. So I think deeper teams naturally will have a better chance. Veteran teams might have a better chance. I think there'll be that young team that starts out hot. Take the Padres, for example, out by you guys, that might ride a wave, or the White Sox here, that might ride a wave early on. But in general, those deeper pitching staffs will certainly help. You can maybe piggyback good starters and work from there. So, I mean, those are the things that I think any natural baseball fan would think of. But it's so unusual, we could throw it all out the window. You just don't know. You just don't know.
How many teams do you think will kind of mess around, use the format and the weird, you know, the weird rules and restarts and pitchers that aren't ready yet to go deep into games, to maybe almost eliminate their starting staffs entirely and just do kind of bullpen by committee for an entire season, or experiment with things like that?
Yeah, I think the teams that have money in their starting staffs, like the Cubs, for example, aren't going to do that. I think teams that are even, you know, sort of coming out of a rebuild that have 4 or 5 starters they like but aren't established aren't going to do that. I think it's just the teams that just don't have enough and realize in 60 games, if we piece something together, maybe we can do well. I mean, we know the Rays have done that over 162. So I could see the Rays doing that. So maybe it's the same teams. I really think that. I mean, take the Cubs, for example, or the Dodgers. The Dodgers are a little deeper. So the Cubs have 5 starters, and that's all they have. They have Yu Darvish. They have John Lester. They have Tyler Chatwood, Kyle Hendricks. That's all they have. So I don't think they're going to mess around that much. So I suppose maybe the teams that have more might mess around more. But if you have a lot of money in your starting staff, there's a reason for that. They're good. And I think you'll probably ride them just like you would. Think of it this way. If those arms are in shape, they will be as fresh as they will ever be in an August and September. So I think you ride the good ones. And then if you don't have enough, you start mixing and matching and do 2-3 innings and all that stuff. But obviously at the start, you might do two or three innings with these starters because they're just not in shape yet.
You know, you mentioned the Padres a little while ago. That's sort of a hit pick. I like the Padres as a potential surprise team. I also think Arizona could be a surprise team. Who do you think the Dodgers' primary challenger is in the West?
Well, I did like what Arizona was doing. I mean, that you know sort of breakout year last year, if that's what you want to call it, challenged a lot. And then they add Madison Baumgartner. I was in Diamondbacks camp before spring training closed down. A lot of excitement. I mean, you sign a guy like that, it tells you, it tells everybody you're pretty serious. Now, they're not a complete team, but 60 games, I kind of like them. I mean, San Francisco, absolutely no chance. I mean,
yeah, none.
I don't think the Padres just have that sort of it factor yet. Like, are they really? I mean, at 60 games, I don't want to rule out anything, but I don't see the Padres jumping up and taking them. Taking the Dodgers down for that division title, so I think Arizona would be it. They're good in all areas. They're not great in any one area.
Yeah, I mean it depends. What do you get from Madison Baumgartner at this point? I still love Robbie Ray. Ketel Marte had a great breakout season last year. They got good sticks in the lineup. That's the one that I think is the sneaky pick to get off on a hot streak.
Yeah, and remember, you're not asking Madison Baumgartner for 30 good starts. You're asking for 10 or 12. That is perfect for him. That is perfect for John Lester. That is perfect for Clayton Kershaw. They don't have to hold anything back. Again, that's if they've stayed in shape and are ready. They're not ready. Here comes a out of shape arm, and then you have an injury. So you have to assume these veterans have stayed in shape. I mean, I've talked to some, but I haven't talked to all of them. And I know they're throwing. And I will say this, I think the pitchers will be ahead of the hitters. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right. Well, listen, Jesse, thank you very much for coming on, man. Appreciate you doing this, and hopefully we can do it again as we get deeper into this process.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I always enjoyed Cubs-Dodgers. I guess we won't see it this year unless it's in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, exactly. Thanks, Jesse.
Take care, guys.
All right, Jesse Rogers there, ESPN baseball reporter. And, I think I was originally on the Padres. Now I think I'm leaning Diamondbacks as the team that could challenge the Dodgers in the West.
San Diego's got all those young players that everybody's been kind of looking at and waiting for. The thought we're a couple years away.
Yep.
But this is this gets back to what we were saying before. Like, they don't need to be good for 162 games. They only need to be good for 60. So if a young player that maybe isn't as deeply scouted gets a little bit ahead of the game, and even if there wouldn't normally be able to sustain it, I think, you know, this is the type of year where that kind of team can do well. So yep. It's going to be hard. I think it's just going to be harder than people would make it seem in a normal season, certainly for the Dodgers on paper.
All right. Coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Lindsay, you ready for it?
I'm always ready for it.
All right. That's next. Mason in Ireland, Brian Kamenetsky in for John, 710 ESPN. Here we go. It's Radio Tinder time, Funch. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Brian Kamenetsky is in for John. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, guys, starting off with Beavis and Butthead, who are making a comeback. Comedy Central announced on Wednesday that a reimagined version of MTV's beloved 90s adult cartoon comedy will be coming to the network. The new version of the show, which originally aired from 1993 to 97, will present the two teenage couch potatoes as Gen X parents raising their Gen Z children. Beavis and Butthead creator Mike Judge returns as writer, producer, and voice actor for the series two leads. Judge said in a statement, "It seemed like the time was right to get stupid again." So Beavis and Butthead, coming back, swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left. I was never a real big Beavis and Butthead fan, and I think it's really tough to capture lightning again in a bottle.
I get a vote, right? I can swipe right on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to swipe right because I do think Mike Judge is a pretty good track record, and I think the instructive lesson here might be the Cobra Kai show. When you go back and you look at the Karate Kid thing, where that didn't seem like it was going to work, but it did, and so I think this has a shot. And, you know, he's right about one thing. It's definitely time to get stupid again. I think we've all
it's a good time for stupid.
Yeah,
I agree with that. And I'm looking forward to watching. And I remember I used to play the Beavis and Butthead video game, although I never could figure out, like, how to play it. Anyway, speaking of reboots, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are coming back to the big screen in CG style. The Ninja Turtles will receive a new take and feature-length film produced by Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and James Weaver. The movie will be animated similar to 2007's TMNT and released via Nickelodeon and Paramount Pictures. There's currently no release date, plot details, or casting details, though. The Turtles back on the big screen. Swipe left or swipe right.
You know, only because of Seth Rogen, I will swipe right. He just always makes me laugh, always finds a way to make me laugh, no matter what he does. I'm a huge Seth Rogen fan. So based on that, I'll swipe right.
Let me figure out who this matters to. Hey, is there a kid down here? Do you guys care or want to see a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, or do you not care? All right, swipe left.
Oh, man.
Swipe left, no interest.
Who is the audience for it?
That's the weird thing. Who is the audience for it?
I feel like it's for people like my age and like Funch's age, because like assuming Funch, you're the same, grew up watching it.
I grew up watching it, but I have no interest in this movie.
I have interest because of Seth Rogen as well. Yeah. So
he put up a bunch of stinkers.
It does
already
sound like something that nobody is asking for.
Yeah, I agree. It's a gentle swipe right only because I believe in Seth Rogen.
We'll see how it goes. All right. Kellogg's has launched an onion-flavored breakfast cereal. And it comes 16 years after the bizarre idea won a very controversial poll. So here's the background. In 2004, Kellogg's in Korea decided to hold a promotional contest where people could vote for the new president of Chex. The two candidates were Delicious Chocolate Checky and the Hideously Green Chaka. Checky promised that if they won, they would find a way to add even more chocolate to chocolate Chex, while Chaka promised to load the cereal with stinky green onions. And despite how the votes actually went, Kellogg's tried to rig the election in Checky's favor, deleting thousands of votes for the onion cereal. And now 16 years later, after outcry from cereal fans, Kellogg's Korea is making good on their 2004 pledge. The green onion Chaka cereal was released last week, and it actually sold out in 2 days in Korea. Trying the green onion flavored Chex. Swipe left or swipe right?
I'm out. I'm going to swipe left on that. I don't understand milk and onions together, onion flavor and milk.
What about sour cream and onion chips?
Yeah, but I'm not putting them in a bowl and pouring milk over them.
Still the same flavors.
Yeah, no, there's a milk flavor that you're adding. Okay. I would not put milk over sour cream and onion potato chips. I don't know why I'd do it with cereal.
Would you try it just out of curiosity?
I might take a bite to see if it's good or not, but it sounds disgusting.
Brian?
I would swipe right out of total curiosity. I'm a sucker for this kind of thing. Like weird flavored things. I will try. I'm not saying I want to eat a whole bowl of it or whatever, but I would absolutely 100% try it.
Well, they sound like they'd be good in like Chex Mix, right?
Oh,
it doesn't sound like a cereal as much as it sounds like a snack food. So,
yeah, it would be good to bake into Chex Mix for sure.
Yeah. All right.
All right, next one. Tourists near the summer home of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth are resorting to Oregon Trail techniques to relieve themselves. With public toilets closed during the coronavirus lockdown, some visitors to the Balmoral Estate have taken to urinating and defecating near busy walkways and monuments. Staff at the British monarch's 50,000-acre property in Scotland were forced to tweet guidance over the weekend on where and how visitors should go to the bathroom outdoors. Quote, whilst toilets are closed, if you need to pee, please do so 30 meters from locks or streams. If you need to defecate, do so as far away as possible from buildings, paths, watercourses, and farm animals. Bury feces in shallow hole and replace the turf.
I personally feel like I've been transported across the pond.
Yeah, no,
by that level of accent work.
A deadly good Queen Elizabeth.
Where did Lindsay go? She's gone. She's been replaced.
I didn't go all in on the accent. I wasn't sure if I was doing the accent properly. So, relieving yourself outdoors. Swipe left or swipe right?
I would not follow the Queen's guidance. It's a 50,000-acre estate. what I do in my little corner of that estate is not going to affect the queen. So I think the guidance is unnecessary. You know, what does a bear do in the woods, man? It makes no difference to me.
Well, I think part of the problem was, along with these instructions came a photo with an area, a little grassy knoll with used toilet paper sprinkled around. So I'm guessing that's where the guidance came from. What do you think, PKM?
I only like to, you know how like you want a chef who looks like he's eaten a little bit before? Like, you know, a fat chef is a good sign.
Yep.
I feel like I only want to take my advice on going to the bathroom outdoors from someone who has gone to the bathroom outdoors. What do you think the odds are the queen has ever had to relieve herself in the out of doors?
I think it's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely.
Swipe, you know what? Left then.
Yeah, you know what? The whole royals thing really bugs me. I just think they're too fancy for their own good. They're outdated. Now, I do love watching that show, The Queen.
The Queen.
I think that's a fantastic show because I'm learning about sort of the history of it. But I think they're useless today. Do they serve any purpose at all?
Tabloids.
I guess that's it. I guess that's it.
The media is struggling, man. You can't eliminate tabloids. We need something.
But they're there to tell you to at least go pee 30 meters from locks or streams.
Locks or streams.
That was actually worse than the first try.
It got worse.
Whatever.
It got worse, Lynch.
I'll leave the accents to you guys then.
All right. Excellent.
That's it for Radio Tinder.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Coming up next. John. It's almost like he's here. Brian, I want to ask you about this this John Wayne Airport situation. Have you been following this story at all?
I have, yes.
I think it is fascinating, and it raises an issue about cancel culture and exactly how we feel about icons of the past. Let's do that coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. We're just talking about Kenny Rogers Roasters. That was a restaurant that has come and gone, but it was actually really good.
It was very tasty. I feel like that one. I don't think feel like they're not gone, but I feel like you don't see as many Dairy Queens anymore.
No.
Like I kind of miss those.
My best friend from college is a Dairy Queen franchisee, so they're still around.
Yeah.
Did you ever have Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips?
No.
Oh, that was a great restaurant. That was a great restaurant.
We had Long John Silver's,
We had Long John Silver's, of course.
But
yeah.
No, do you know anybody who's ever been to Long John Silver's? I don't.
No, I do not. I do not. I know they go. I know they go. All the restaurants my grandmother used to go to. Olive Garden, man. She loves her some Olive Garden.
Oh, unlimited breadsticks.
Unlimited breadsticks. The olds
love unlimited breadsticks.
Do you love Olive Garden, Lindsay?
I do.
Do you interpret that as Italian food?
No, not at all.
It's like, yeah, it's not.
It's not, but it's still good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I find this to be an interesting story. The Orange County Democratic Party is now calling for the removal of the name John Wayne from the Orange County Airport. At issue, they say, are offensive, homophobic, and racist comments made by the now deceased actor. These comments were apparently made in an issue of Playboy magazine in the early 70s. So this is what he said. This is how he's quoted. I believe in white supremacy until the blacks are educated to a point of responsibility. I don't believe in giving authority and positions of leadership and judgment to irresponsible people. It's not my judgment. The academic community has developed certain tests that determine whether the blacks are sufficiently equipped scholastically, but some blacks have tried to force the issue and enter college when they haven't passed the tests and don't have the requisite background. He also notes that while he is not personally in favor of slavery, he says, quote, I don't feel guilty about the fact that 5 or 10 generations ago, these people were slaves.
I mean, that's pretty.
I thought it was bad when I read it.
Yeah, it's worse.
But when I read it out loud, it got a lot worse.
Here's the rule number one. Whenever you put an article in front of an ethnic group or a racial group or whatever it might be, that is a bad sign.
Correct.
You know, that. So, I mean, right there, but like, this is horrifying stuff that isn't racist, just by like this discussion that we're having now about, you know, people from 100 years ago, 200 years ago, Civil War times, whatever. Yeah, but you have to, you know, what about the context of their day? Like when John Wayne said this stuff in the 70s, it was over the edge racist. Like, this is not, you know, tolerable for its time.
This was 1971. Terrible. This was 6 years after the Voting Rights Act passed. This was coming out of the Civil Rights Movement. The Civil Rights Movement still going on, and gave this interview to Playboy. So do you take the name of John Wayne off the Santa Ana airport?
I certainly don't have a problem with it. I mean, like, here's the deal.
You don't have a problem with it, but do you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially if the people of Orange County want to do that, then they absolutely should. I would vote yes to remove his name if I were asked. But, you know, I don't see what people are clinging to. I understand he was an icon. He's an American icon and all these other things. I'm not talking about never put John Wayne movies on TV again or whatever, right, whatever, right, these things. But there's no reason that you have to honor him with the name,
correct,
of a major Southern California airport. There's no rule that says once your name is on something, it has to stay there forever, or that we have to honor someone. And naming the airport after somebody is an honor. You can't put a plaque up outside the airport that says it's John Wayne Airport, but by the way, he had some really horrendous views about Native Americans and black people and homosexuals and all of these groups, you know, just so you know, like, you either have his name on it as an honorary or you don't. And I don't think there's any reason to honor somebody like John Wayne when so many people that he despised live in that community.
Yeah, I completely agree on this. And by the way, we've debated this before. I debated with John Ireland on this, and I made the point then. And it is sort of the devil's advocate point now. Are you willing to make this change based on one interview given by an 80-year-old guy 40 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. Because it's not the only time he said those. There's a longer record of John Wayne being a racist than just that interview.
Yes. I actually have no issue with the name of the airport coming down. In fact, I would take it down off the airport. Lindsay, what about you? Nothing?
Sorry, I was on mute there. I think that you know, there's a lot of things, and this included, that need to be changed as far as names and monuments and statues. And not to get political, but, you know, because I don't really care about the politics on the sports talk show so much. But Joe Biden said today that a lot of these things belong in museums and not as monuments. And I think this is one of those things where you don't want to forget the history because it is what it is. But at the same time, naming something significant like an airport after somebody who's racist is just, it's not acceptable in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it should come down. And the moment you used Joe Biden's name, you became political. You know,
way
that,
to go.
Okay, well, I could have
way to go, Lindsay.
A presidential candidate, Lindsay, made a very good point.
Yeah.
Lindsay, no. Hey, Lindsay, why don't you stick to sports, okay?
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
Stick to sports.
I'll shut up and dribble.
Let's stay in our lane. Right. Let's stay in our lane. No, I don't like doing politics on the show. I think it's no fun, and it pisses off half the world, and I don't see any point.
But like, this is one of those things that it is an interesting cultural moment, because like, we're not talking about should Washington rename. It is Washington. It's like Reagan National Airport. There are people who like Ronald Reagan and don't like Ronald Reagan.
Sure.
But like, this isn't that. This is a person whose views were well beyond like a normal political spectrum or normal views on race and things like that at a time that wasn't that long ago. When it's so funny. This doesn't even get into what we didn't even read the quotes about Native Americans.
Right.
I mean, good Lord.
It's more
and so,
of a human rights thing than a political thing, I think.
I agree with you. It's a collective value. I don't care if you're right or left. There's nobody who heard you read that quote, Steve, and was like, I dig it. Like, that guy is spot on. Like,
yeah,
you know,
and shouldn't be honored. Shouldn't be
exactly.
honored. And by the way, and on a lot of these monuments, I mean, come on. These guys were traitors who lost. They were traitors to their country, and they lost the war. And yes. we have monuments up to them still. Take them down. Take them all down. By the way, you know, you mentioned earlier off the air, state of Mississippi is changing their flag to eliminate the Confederate flag, which was part of it in the upper right quadrant of it. I actually am surprised it happened. I thought that it was so ingrained in Mississippi and Mississippians and the South that would stay. I'm surprised that it changed. It's the right thing, and it should have changed long before now, but I'm surprised that they actually got that done.
I'm surprised at how quickly it happened and how little opposition. And honestly, sports have a lot to do with it. Athletes saying, I'm not going to go play there unless like that flag has changed. And, you know, the SEC saying, we're not going to hold them. And that's not new. But, you know, the SEC kind of reminding, like, we're not coming back to your state until that changes. I mean, I really do think that sports were a catalyst for getting that done. And, again, it speaks to how sports and the real world, as they say, aren't separate, have never been separate, and never will be separate. So stop asking. Lindsay, talk about it, that stuff as much as you want. You don't have to shut up and dribble.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I like to steer clear of it on the show. But to me, some of this isn't politics.
I agree.
This isn't left-right politics. This is just what's right and what's wrong. All right.
We're not arguing about tax policy.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. Coming up next for you, I want to get into let's do this. Lindsay, I'm going to categorize you as a little paranoid.
Okay, about what?
About your cell phone and what, quote unquote, they know about you.
I think I'm just more educated on the issue than you.
Okay, so coming up next, I'm going to play Paranoia Guy, an actual recording of an actual guy. And then, Lindsay, I want you to respond to it because I think you are Paranoia Girl. That's coming up next for you. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. We are counting down to hot dog eating. Hot dog eating tomorrow night, 6:15, me versus Sliwa. I am so excited about this. I intend to just kick Sliwa's ass. And by the way, if I don't for some reason, it means I have to hang on tomorrow night and do Sliwa's show until 9 o'clock.
I feel like we are going to learn so much about Alan. Like he's still a bit of a mystery, still a bit of a wild card. Who is this Alan Sliwa? We're going to learn a lot about what makes him go. He spends like what percentage of Alan's time, you know, with all the Lakers stuff he does is spent talking about Kobe Bryant. We're going to find out how much Mamba mentality Alan Sliwa has in him.
He's got to bring it. Tomorrow night. Bring it tomorrow night. Hey, I want to thank Antonio Morales, who is a great writer for The Athletic, wrote a tremendous piece. It's an oral history of the Mighty 690, which was a station that I got to be part of. It was my first job here on the West Coast. It was the first all-sports radio station on the West Coast with a pretty legendary lineup. Me and Ireland were doing mornings. Jim Rome was doing middays. Chet 40, Steve Hartman doing afternoon drive. Lee Hamilton doing late afternoon drive, I guess is how it went. It was an incredible, incredible lineup, an incredible station, and there's a great oral history to it that was written by Antonio Morales. I tweeted out a link a little while ago. All right, so Lindsay, producer Lindsay, is she can be a little paranoid, right, Lindsay?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right?
I wouldn't use the word paranoid. I'd use the word woke.
Woke. Okay. So I came across this piece of sound. I'm going to call this Paranoia Guy. He is driving while he's doing this little riff about how scared we all should be and how paranoid he is. Funch, hit it.
Well, hello, TikTok. So y'all remember last week when we all had cell phone disruptions? Everybody thought maybe it had to do with Antifa or maybe it had to do with protest. No, no. No, they added COVID trackers to our phones, kids. Don't believe me? You got an iPhone, go to settings. Go into your privacy. Go into health. You'll see it. You got an Android, go into your settings. Then go into Google settings. COVID-19 notifications and tracking right on top. Yeah. Y'all still think that this is just about some little virus? Y'all think this is just innocent? Yeah, you didn't get microchipped, but you got a tracker on you. And it's telling them everything we're doing.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's
wake up yet, kids?
Telling you everything we're doing. Lindsay, is he right?
Well, according to my iPhone that I just looked up, there is COVID-19 exposure logging in the health app on your iPhone.
Is it on or off?
No, though. I'm looking for it. I'm looking for it.
Like you just said, you go to your settings.
Right. Check.
Go to privacy.
Privacy. Go to health. Okay.
Privacy is in like the third group, last one there. Click on health.
Right.
And the COVID-19 exposure logging.
Is there?
It enables the app to notify you if you may have been exposed to COVID-19.
Yeah, now mine says off. What does it actually do?
I think you have to have an app installed that goes along with it.
This is correct.
And then if you're diagnosed with COVID-19, you can choose to share your information with other people that have theirs on, so you can tell people if you choose to share and they share. So this guy's saying that they're tracking it that way. It's
they're giving you the option to do it.
Right.
It's not a mandatory thing.
There are a lot of things that Apple has put on my phone.
Yeah, I don't recognize
that I either do or
things.
I don't do.
Yeah. Like, I always keep location services off.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't need to know where I am.
No,
for everything, because I mean, you need it on for a lot of things.
No, yeah, I turn it on for when I need the app that I'm using. Then I turn it on.
Yeah, like if I'm going to use my map function, if I'm going to use Apple Maps, then I'll turn on location services. But if I'm not using something that needs the location, then I'm not going to. I will keep it in the off mode.
So you need to tell me every time you use any app that requires your location, you go in it and turn it on and off.
Yes.
After every time you use
I'm telling
it.
You that, yes.
And you think I'm paranoid?
No, it's just you don't even have to do that. All it does is like you have it set for when I'm using it, turn
yeah,
it on, and
okay,
when I'm
sure.
not using
if you
it, turn,
buy
I don't,
that.
It doesn't require me to do anything other than go into the app, and then it turns itself off when I'm done.
Oh, sure it does.
It also uses battery when you have location services on.
That's
apps.
True.
I mean, I have my location services turned on for the apps that say, like, on while using, like Brian said, because, you know, there's certain things like maps, and I don't have it on, like, my social media, you know, like Uber Eats, Postmates, stuff like that. But I don't go in and turn them on and off every time I use them. I feel like
I go in and turn them on and off.
Okay, well, I think you're the paranoid one.
Lindsay, and I also keep a piece of tape over the camera on my computer.
There you go. Well, that's just so you can walk around naked.
Is that am I tinfoil hat guy?
I think you are, because I don't do that.
Do you have a tiny tinfoil hat for your phone, Steve?
I don't. But if I am turning on and off location services, and if I do have a piece of tape over the camera on my laptop, does that make me tinfoil hat guy? I guess it kind of does.
I think it does, because I think that's a lot of work to go in and turn it on and then turn it off every time you're done using the app. Like, that's a lot. And I don't have the camera thing on, because my theory is if they want to track me and do whatever, I'm not doing anything wrong. So I don't really care. And you know what? If somebody ever decides to kidnap me or murder me or both, then they'll be able to find me.
Because you have location services on?
Yeah,
and that'll teach them.
They've solved so many.
You really went to worst case scenario there, didn't you?
Joke's on you, person who kidnapped and murdered me, because I have my location services on.
Yeah. We do live in scary times these days, and there's a lot of single women in my age group getting kidnapped and or murdered.
Totally understand. All right, coming up next for you is The Scoop, all the big headlines of the day that we haven't gotten to yet. I don't know if we're going to hear from Major League Baseball about the number of positive COVID tests they had. According to earlier, we talked to Jesse Rogers. He thinks that players are showing up at their home stadiums today, getting tested, going home, and then waiting the 24 to 48 hours to find out what the result is going to be. So I would imagine we'll start hearing actual results. And he said, could be dozens of guys, could be 100 guys. If it's anything more than 100 guys, you've got to be concerned about it. But we will start hearing results. I don't think names. I think they're going to try to keep names out of this as much as possible. But I'm sure some will trickle out. But Major League Baseball teams did show up at their home stadiums and were COVID tested today. All right, coming up next for you is The Scoop, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.